Well, my goodness, it's February the 14th, 2019 in the Lucy Coleman studio in Los Angeles, California. Rainy day, rainy week, rainy couple of weeks. Hey, the sermon, Jimmy Smith. It's kind of a jazzy Thursday morning in Los Angeles. It was 1963 when this album was recorded. I was 19 years old. Can you believe that? I remember hearing this on the jazz station in Los Angeles. Jimmy Smith. I'm trying to see who this is on the guitar. Sounds like Kenny Burrell, I'm not sure. Let me read. Thank you. Jimmy Smith at the Hammond Organ from an album that was recorded way back in 1963 when I was 19 years old. A great album. I remember the cover too. Any Number Can Win. He had six beautiful women on the cover. A white red-headed woman, an Asian woman, a black woman, another white woman, a Hispanic woman, and an Indian woman. Any Number Can Win. Jimmy had a picture of himself in his black Jaguar. And I remember the album when it came out. This was the premier jazz organist when I was a young man. The Squeeze of Life. Look at me. I've lived all these years. I remember Jimmy Smith. I remember the album, and we're going to be hearing more from this album right here. There's one that I want to really play. And it starts off, and it has this rhythmic beat to it, and it's called "You Came a Long Way from St. Louis." You came a long way from St. Louis, ba-bum. And this is a great little album. Let me read what it has on the back before I get into today's webcast, okay? As a matter of fact, you see the picture on my website, right? I've had it up there a couple of days. That picture was taken when I was working as a shipping clerk in Sherborne Press. It was located at 1640 South La Cienega Boulevard in Los Angeles. Of course, it's no longer there. It was run by the Lenetskys, and I was a shipping clerk there. I became the foreman or the supervisor of the warehouse, and that picture was taken right before I went into the Army. And somebody's, I forget what the conversation was. It had something to do with, well, if they send you to Vietnam and you don't come back, we want to take a picture of you. And so I told him, go ahead, just make sure you give me a couple of copies. As I said in the paragraph, they didn't have photo shoots back then. At least if they had them, I didn't know about them. And I got to share this with you. I did not think that I was a good-looking fella at all back in the day. There was nothing that anyone would look to me towards. I was just a regular black guy just doing what I know to do. Let me read what's on the back of this album. That number was called The Sermon. And if you listen closely, you can hear the rhythmic sounds of the preacher preaching to the congregation. The African-American jazz artist could not remove the church from his mind. I mean, I should dedicate this whole hour to that, to kind of share with you youngsters a little bit about what we had to go through. We had a lot of mess we had to go through. On his 50s LP, Jimmy Smith was the unpredictable. But in the prolific 60s, his energetic organ was the unstoppable. Ah, yes. He was unpredictable because you didn't know what he was going to do on the Hammond. And then everybody tried to imitate him. Nobody could play this piece like Jimmy was playing it. Here's Smith in this album, the cover says, diverse repertoire with a series of big bands. And that's why I want you to hear You Come a Long Way from St. Louis, because he has, I don't know, maybe it tells me, I thought it was the, he used to play with the big bands, especially with his album that he made, Virginia Woolf. He played with the big band. I have that album somewhere in my stacks here, and you got to hear this music to really understand it. Featuring Verve section men like Kenny Burrell, that was Kenny Burrell on the guitar, Milt Hilton, Joe Newman, Phil Woods, including some Ray Charles hits and some title themes, because he does Ruby on this album. Beautiful rendition. I may get to it today. And it's arranged by Klaus Augerman. I remember him because when I was a young man and and when they had real jazz radio, Claus would come on and talk about the arrangements and how it worked. Verve was a big record company, also Capitol, Atlantic, but usually Verve. And if you could come here on the West Coast and get a contract with Verve, you were in the money. And so this was great. And Any Number Can Win, that was a film that they had out. So Jimmy Smith was on the organ with collective personnel, Jimmy Maxwell, Joe Newman, James Sadler, Charlie Shavers, Smokey Young, a whole, man, Kenny Burrell was playing with him. Man, this was jazz back in the day. And I'm going to stop running off at the mouth. I'm going to let you hear the number one track on this thing. You came a long way from St. Louis. I want you to hear this and check out the orchestration. And if I'm butting in or you hear me rejoicing in the background, and I'll get into the difference. This is what I want you to think about. A couple of weeks ago, I had a couple of guys visit the house and ask them a very important question. I'm always asking this question of young men because I never had older men to ask me the question when I was a young man, like in that picture there. If I had an older man to ask me, John, can you tell me what your life is going to look like when you're 75 years old and above? And I couldn't, man, I remember when I was in the 11th grade looking at my left and right hands, I was in, I think, some kind of class at Jordan High School, and myself and another black guy was sitting near the window, looking out the window when we should have been paying attention. I think it was an English literature class. And I recall the conversation because I said, man, I wonder how I'm going to look when I'm 50 years old. And the young man said, what are you talking about? I said, look at my hands. Will they be the same hands? Will it be the same voice? And here I am, 75, looking at a picture of me when I was a young whippersnapper. Same picture you're looking at right now, if you're listening to this recent webcast. And I hope that you guys are copying some of these pictures. Keep them, as you keep these sound pieces, because you have somebody. Listen, I'm asking you the question, what are you going to look like when you look like that? Okay, let's see. I think we're ready to do this thing. That's it. Listen. Did you hear that? Did you hear those trumpets and all that stuff? This is You Came a Long Way from St. Louis. Listen to the orchestration. I mean, full orchestra, Hammond organ, 1963. I'm 19 years old. I'm hearing this on my daddy's stereo machine because I used to go by my daddy's apartment. I was living, Daddy had moved out of the house. My grandma was taking care of us youngsters. And this is the music that I was hearing when I was 19. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Thank you. Came a long way from St. Louis, Jimmy Smith. Man, he got a lot of great cuts on this album, like The Ape Woman. That's a nice one. I'll play that one maybe next time. How are you feeling about life? I think that's a good way to start off this wonderful Thursday morning. Clouds in the sky. It's been raining for a couple of days now. Raining all last week, this week. I'm enjoying it. How about it? Think advancing yourself. What will life look like where you live if you're to grow old? I know, we don't really like to go that forward ahead, but I think it's important to do that. Because when I look at that picture, I remember the jacket that I had on. It was a colorful jacket. It was green and red and orange and blue. The jacket belonged to Clarence Armstrong, Beaver, because we were very close friends. We had our little singing group together, and I don't know what I was doing with his jacket. I think he had spent the night at the house, and I had to go to work that next day, so I wore the jacket to work. I liked the jacket. The T-shirt that I had on was mint green. I recall it. It wasn't a T-shirt. It was a nice weaved shirt because we wore nice clothes back in the early 60s. And I would save up my little money from working as a shipping clerk and buy pretty nice clothes. All of us wore jeans. I didn't wear khakis. It was jeans. We wore Levi Strauss jeans back in the day. It was, man, I wish I could walk back in time and talk to me and see where my mind took me. Hey, Harcourt. Good morning. Harcourt hears me talking. He probably wants to go out and take a leak. I'll take him out later. But I remember those days back when I was 19 years old when this music came out. And the perspective of life was quite different from a lot of young people today. We didn't have any frustrations. Of course, there was a war waging over there. As a matter of fact, I got drafted not many months after that picture was taken. And next thing I know, I'm down in Fort Polk, Louisiana. Then I'm in Camp Gordon, Georgia. And then I'm in Fort Ord, California. And the next thing I know, my behind was being shipped all the way over to Seoul, Korea. I'd never heard of the place. Oh, Korea I've heard of because of the Korean War, I guess. But Seoul? I thought that they were shipping me to a little country hamlet. I didn't know that it was the capital city of South Korea. So, I was spared. Where a lot of my companions were being blown up and killed. Things like that. As a matter of fact, I have a picture on my Facebook. You go to my Facebook now, today, and you will see on the top scroll a picture of me when I was stationed in Korea. after I had went into the Army. It's not a very good picture, but I was talking about when my contemporaries were being massacred by the government. They sent us over there as fodder for the slaughter. Now, I'm going to tell you something, how I felt. When I got drafted, I didn't try to dodge the draft. I didn't have money to go to Canada. I didn't have any college deference. I didn't think that I was college material. That came long after I got out of the Army. See, I didn't even think that I could go to college. I didn't think I was smart enough. Went on to go through grad school, earned 3 collegiate degrees, did a lot of things. People tell me all the time, John, you've accomplished more than a lot of black guys have accomplished in life. I don't think so. I think that my life was mediocrity. It was really nothing. I want young people to think about themselves, because I think in this highly technological era that we live in, I think that if you prepare yourself, you can go a hell of a long way. See, we have to stop feeding our young people's minds that you need a Grammy, you need a hit record, you can become the next Kanye West, Will Smith, and all that kind of stuff. Now, if you can do that, fine. If you got dreams of becoming a moving star and all that kind of stuff, but are you willing to pay the price that they've paid for it? Let me tell you something. I live in Hollywood, and you don't get where they got unless you pay it to the piper. And I'm telling you, it's a pretty high price to pay. When I think about me, because I remember at that time I used to, my boss had a lot of rich friends, and they would come down out of the hills, out of the Hollywood Hills, right down there on La Cienega. We weren't far from where they have, West Hollywood, that part of town. And I remember one of Lou's, that was my boss's name, friend, had to put his Jaguar in the shop to get it repaired. And I had to take this man home one day. Lou called me from the warehouse and he said, John, I'd like you to take my car, his Cadillac, and drive this man to his home up in the Hollywood Hills. Because I was one of his best employees. I was a young black man, had my license, never had a ticket. And so he had me take him home. Let me go over here and fix this computer. This computer went burp. I don't want it to do that. There we go. Hold on. Let me finish the story for you so you can understand how it was. I took him home. I didn't know where I was going. He told me to turn here, turn there. You know, you're going all up in the Hollywood Hills. And all of a sudden, I didn't see any regular streets. I just saw streets with ivy around the houses. And man, I was up in where people lived in private places. I went down this driveway. He hit a button. I went down this driveway. The gate opened up. I drove way up there. I said, oh my God, I didn't even know people lived like that. And it kind of amused me because where was I living? I was with my daddy on 118th and Broadway in Los Angeles. Now, here I am up in the hills. When I got up there, I heard a rock and roll band. And he said, that's my son. He's trying to be famous. Come in. I'd like you to meet him, because the man was talking with me. And I told him I sing a little bit. So I went up there. And I wasn't thinking anything about it. And when I went up there, his son introduced himself to me. He had long hair because everybody was trying to be a Beatle or something like that. And myself and Beaver, the guy whose jacket I have on in the picture, we were trying to be the first black surfer singing group. We were going to sing the songs that the Beach Boys were singing, but only we were going to be black. And that's what we told our then manager, Eddie Beal. That was his name, Eddie B-E-A-L. He had an office down on Hollywood and Vine, and we would go down there. He would say, let me hear some of your music. I had a tape recorder, a reel-to-reel. We'd play our music for him, and he said, this is pretty good. Y'all wrote this. Beaver and I, we wrote about 10 songs. We were on our way, people. On our way. Then it happened. I got picked up in the draft. Because when Uncle Sam sent you a letter in the mail, you had to go. You couldn't say, I don't want to go. The letter came and said, Dear sir, be informed. Come down here and bring a change of underwear with you. That's all. Something like that. And be ready to stay. Bring some reading material. I didn't know what was happening. I went down there. They gave me a barrage of tests. And, man, because they had to test you. And next thing I know, I was on a plane flying towards Louisiana. First in Texas. I think we landed in Texas. I'd never been on a plane in my life. Yeah, if you're looking at that picture right there, that's the first time I had ever gotten on a jet plane when they drafted me. And the government took it, man. All of us guys from Los Angeles, white, black, Hispanic, Asian. And you know you had to register when you got out of high school. Now, at that time, a lot of white boys was paying money to stay out of that because, see, their parents knew what was happening. My daddy was in the Army, so I figured we all had to go in the Army. As a matter of fact, that's what my daddy told me. He said, it's your constitutional duty to serve in the armed forces. And I recall, I'll have to put that other picture up there so that you can see it too. I can put a barrage of pictures on this website now when I want to. But I'll put that picture up there. And I was looking real, real strange when that drill sergeant told me that he's getting ready to send us to Vietnam so we can die. And I had this look on my face. And at that time, I was not in any way connected with the church. I wasn't a Christian, if you can say that. I wasn't spiritual, religious, or nothing. But when the sergeant told me that he was preparing us, a black sergeant too, he said that he was preparing us to go over there and die. And when he said that, the armed forces cameraman was standing in front of our troop, and he took a picture when I had this look on my face. And it wasn't the same look that you're looking at on the website, because we were in the, if you see those books next to me, I don't know whether you can see the titles of the books, but people were ordering these books from all over the country, really all over the world. Sherborn Press was a publishing company, and they would have writers, and they would write about sexual things. And it was in the 60s, and they even had a section of their place where they had sex films and sex devices, dildos and everything. We sold all that stuff. Gem Products, Sherborn Press. That's the name of the place. The Lineskis are dead now. They ran that. And it was a lucrative, you can imagine, it was a lucrative business. And I thought about getting older. Would I ever get married? What kind of a life would I live? I had no idea that I'd ever become a pastor. I had no idea that I'd ever teach philosophy in college. My wife is the one that, for those of you that are looking for a wife, try to get with the woman that is going to push you to become the best person that you could be. She asked me one day, she said, "Well, John, is this all you're going to do?" Because I had become a warehouseman for the city of L.A., working for the LAPD. And we were married, and we had two little daughters. And Lucy asked me one day, she said, "Is this all you're going to do, just have this job?" And I snapped at her. I said, "Why you keep asking me that? I'm working, I'm bringing the money in, you got a nice apartment, you got an apartment full of furniture, and you asking me, is this all I'm going to do?" And I was trying to watch a basketball game, and I said, "I bought the color TV for you, I did that." See, she was a progressive, I wasn't. I was satisfied with nothing. Just a roof over my head, a little color TV, watch a movie now and then. No, she asked me, she said, "John, if you went to school, it would make your life easier. You would not have to work as hard as you're working in the warehouse." I said, "The forklift is picking up the stuff. All I'm doing is work. I work a forklift machine. I work in supply division." Supply division kept all 17 outlying police stations with supplies. We had to supply it. And the LAPD had their own supply warehouse. It was separate from the regular city warehouse that kept recreation and parks with supplies and kept other city institutions with supplies. LAPD was so huge, they had their own supply division. And I was an employee of the LAPD. Now, let me tell you what privilege that gave me. Because the deputy chiefs during the summertime would throw barbecues. And supply division was a huge open warehouse on San Fernando and Fletcher. San Fernando Road and Fletcher Drive. It was right across the street from the Van Camp Bakery. And it was a huge facility. We had about five or six warehousemen working there. And we worked every week to supply these 17 police divisions. Sometime we would ride with the LAPD truck drivers to deliver these things. And that's what kept the city going. I don't know how they get the supplies today. I think they're working out of a Piper Tech downtown. Because I worked for the LAPD about 17 years. And so I saw them advance, and now it's probably something extraordinary. I love to go down to just check it out one day. Since I'm retired, that's what I'd like to do. I'd like to go down and just go and check out the place where I used to work and see how it's run today. That would be an awful lot of fun to me to go back in history. Don't you guys ever think about that? Don't you guys ever think about how it was where you were? And we're living in a city, and technology is so advanced, even police work, everything. They can catch you through your DNA now. I recall I was telling someone the other day that Los Angeles had a downtown warehouse. It's not even there anymore. The building's gone. Where they used to keep all the records, police records, in this huge warehouse. And I was there one day, and a police officer that took care of the archives of old police photographs and records asked me if I wanted to see the singer, Sam Cooke. And I said, "What are you talking about, man?" Sam Cooke had been shot and killed. And he showed me the original papers, the actual paperwork for the death and the shooting of Sam Cooke. I had it in my hand. I looked at all the pictures. I saw everything. I said, "Wow." And he was talking about other murders that took place in L.A. And he showed me these things because they kept them in the central warehouse downtown. I don't know where they are now. I have no idea. I would think that the city still has them on file somewhere. I would think either that or they're on microfilm or something. if they didn't keep the actual things there. But it's keeping records. And that's what I kind of view myself doing here when I talk with you. I want you to think about your life in those terms. Your life is a record of events. And it's important. You know, you don't want to think that if a big giant comet hit the earth and devastated everything and you'd be gone in an instant. Of course we would. But until that happens, your history is there. We're making history. That's what it's all about. Well, let's historically go back to this album. And I want to play another cut from this. It's a nice number here. You came a long way from St. Louis. Well, I got another number here. And it's called Go On Train. Cut number four. Let me see if I can do this. And I hope that I come up. Go On Train. I think you'll like this. If I can get it to play. My CD kind of jams sometime on me. And I'm just talking a little bit about us flowing with the times. You know what I mean? Okay, there it is. I think I just fixed it. Let's listen to Jimmy Smith. Do a number called Go On Train. Jimmy Smith.
Thank you.
band sound of Jimmy Smith. Man, wasn't that something? Full orchestra. You know how much that costs to go in the studio and do something like that now? And man, let me tell you, Verve Records, Capitol Records, top of the line institutions back in the day. That's how they made music. I'm just reflecting on, you know, keeping it smooth on a rainy Thursday morning. I got to go and see a friend of mine that's not locked up, but laid up and kind of like recovering. And I hope that I have enough energy in me to pump him up. And maybe I'll try to put this webcast on and cheer him up a little bit. I like that number right there. That number, it was called Gone Train. I like that. I like that. Jimmy Smith on the Hammond organ. Now, here's a theme from the movie. And the movie came out around 1963, Any Number Can Win. Let me see if you remember the movie, if you were alive back then. Jimmy Smith playing that Hammond organ, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time with you today. I spent a few days away from the mic after my birthday because I've been cleaning up the house, still throwing out things, and feeling better, readjusting my life to the point where I'm feeling comfortable doing what I need to do. And let me step away from this and do this because I got to make an adjustment. I have to make an adjustment on the big computer, and it's not helping me. Hold on. I have to make these adjustments. My equipment is old, and so I have to make adjustments before I run into serious problems here. There we go. But I hope that you've enjoyed spending a little time with me. Please enjoy the website. Scroll down. Investigate it. Think through some issues. Come to it on your own, and I'll get back with you soon as I feel up to it. All right?